When I was 11 years old, my family experienced a visitation from another world. Not another planet, just another world. I remember it very well. It was right after my brother's bar mitzvah. The denizen of this world was named Mr. Milestone. Mr. Milestone, who was a member of my father's congregation, was an expert in Wedgwood China. And he was the only person I ever knew or ever saw in Philadelphia or anywhere until many years later in Los Angeles who drove a Rolls Royce. And Mr. Milestone drove up to our home one day to drop off a bar mitzvah present for my brother. And we peeked through the shades of the living room to see the Rolls Royce. Because it was, like many rare species to a naturalist, something that we knew existed but never expected to see. And I say that only half-kiddingly. It was unimaginable that someone would really drive a Rolls Royce. And it seemed to us like a visitation from another world. It's somewhat less rare here in Beverly Hills. But the truth is that questions of wealth, all across the board, but especially of vast wealth, troubles and convulses our society in ways that all of you know very well. To have a lot of money is like manna. It's magical. It comes from heaven. It transforms the world. It makes everything seem different because of its power. And just like manna, which is what the Torah tells us explicitly, wealth is a test. God says that the manna is a test. When you receive it, you're tested by having it. Now, poverty is also a test. But so is wealth. As always, the incomparable Emerson said it best. It is difficult, he said, to carry a full cup. Think about that. When you are filled up, it's hard to move in a balanced way through the world. And without oversimplifying the issues around wealth, because they are many and complex, I want to suggest that there are essentially two ways in which you can use great wealth. Apart from a very physical, I'm going to talk about the intangible ways. There's a very physical, tangible way, right? You can acquire things, you can feed people who are hungry, you can use it for ostensibly physical, material things, but I'm putting those aside. I want to talk about the two spiritual ways in which you can use vast wealth. One is you can use it to extend your power and reach and influence in this world. So, I don't know, you could say, buy the Wall Street Journal. Just. But there is a second use. And in order to explain that second use, I have to tell you about how I spent my time earlier this week. I was at a conference in Utah, of all places, a gathering of 35 Jewish leaders from across the world in Park City, Utah. It was sponsored by the Bronfman Foundation. And Edgar Bronfman and his son Adam Bronfman, who lives in Park City, Utah, which explains the location of the conference. They even koshered the kitchen. This is a first for the Stein Erickson Lodge. Put on this conference of Jewish leaders. And to explain the way in which this illustrates a certain use of wealth, let me tell you something that the Gera Rebbe said about manna. Actually, one of the sessions was run by Art Green, who taught the Sfat Emet. And the Sfat Emet's father was the first Gera Rebbe. And he once asked the following question about manna in the wilderness. He said, you know, it is crucial for all Jews to give tzedakah, right? That's a fundamental commandment. In fact, so much so that you may know that according to the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, if you give money to a beggar, you know the first thing that beggar is supposed to do is turn around and give tzedakah to someone else. That's how crucial it is. So he asked the following question. How did the Jews in the Midbar, in the wilderness, give tzedakah? They had nothing, and everybody had the same thing. And his answer is that, you know, according to the tradition, manna could taste like whatever you imagined. But he said, what kind of imagination for different foods do people have who were slaves in Egypt? They don't know from varieties of foods. But he said, some people had tasted things that others hadn't. Some people had more active culinary imaginations. And so they would share with others possibilities of how the food might taste. And that was their tzedakah. In other words, one way of giving tzedakah is through imagination, through sharing yours, through sparking others. Now let's return to the conference. This was not a business conference. This conference was not going to advance the holdings of the Bronfman family one penny. In fact, it was expensive to put on this conference. Not only that, but the conference was not at all about the ideas of the Bronfmans with regard to Judaism. They both got up and spoke, both Edgar and Adam, and said what they thought, but they knew they were in a room of 35 Jews who spent their lives teaching and practicing Judaism. Everybody had their own ideas, to say the least. What was the purpose of the conference? It was to do exactly what the Gerer Rebbe talked about. And this is the different kind of tzedakah that great wealth can spark. That is, it fired the imagination of others. It motivated others to think and to dream, to interpret and to learn. When I sat next to Edgar Bronfman the first night of the conference and I said to him, what do you want to get out of this conference? He said, more. More connections, more ideas, more conferences, more imagination. Now, why do you do that? Why do you use your resources to stimulate someone else in ways that may not even be what you agree with? That also, unsurprisingly, is answered in this morning's parsha. When God says to the Israelites through Moshe, of course, as they are about to go into the land of Israel, V'amarta bilvavecha kochi v'otzem yadai asali et hachayil hazeh. When you go into the land, you know what you're going to say to yourself, says Moses? My strength and my smarts and my heart and my might, that's what gave me this wealth. Don't say that, says God, because the wealth is like manna. It's a gift. It doesn't matter how much you worked for it, the society with all of its structures and institutions that allows you to generate wealth, the abilities you have, the brain you were given, the upbringing you have, the language you speak, all of that was a gift. The hardest worker in the world is responsible maybe for 1% or 2% of what it is that ultimately produces his or her wealth. Everything else, I mean, look around you. Who among us invented walls and air conditioning and microphone and seats and carpeting? The world was waiting for us. And however you succeed in that world, what God tells the Israelites is true. It is not kochi v'otzem yadi. It isn't my might and my strength. And therefore, because I have been given this manna from heaven, I want to give it to you and see what you do with it. In fact, what the conference was really about is something else that's mentioned in the parsha. Because in this parsha, we learn how Moses created a second set of tablets. Because the situation in the world had broken the first set. And that is the situation of the Jewish people. Judaism as it existed, the first set of tablets was broken by the modern world, by the convulsions, by the loss, by the terror, by the pain of the modern world. We no longer can live with the first set of tablets. And we have to fashion a new one, which is exactly what we are doing in Judaism today. We are seeking the way to make a new set of tablets and to also persuade people that they need this new set. It is also said in this morning's Parsha, in a fascinating and troublesome verse, God says, I made you hungry and I fed you manna. And all the commentators say, why did he make them hungry? If he hadn't made them hungry, they wouldn't have needed the manna. But the whole point is, we have this great spiritual gift, but some Jews don't realize how hungry they are. And we have to stimulate that hunger and fashion the tablets. And the attempt to do that is what Jewish education and conferences and ideas and teaching, that's what it's all about. To recognize that we need something new based on something very old. And that we are all together in this endeavor. And so, that's why, if you are gifted with this tremendous wealth and a sense of obligation towards the world, you might, if you have a neshama, if you have a soul, seek not only to extend your influence, but to stimulate the imagination and the learning of others. And now here's the last point. When I talk about people who are very rich, I'm talking about you. Everybody who is sitting in this congregation. You may not think of yourself as very rich, but that's only because you're comparing yourself to your neighbor. I would like you to not be parochial in space or in time. Instead of comparing yourself to the person who lives down the street, compare yourself to the person who lives across the world. Compare yourself to the Jew who lives in the former Soviet Union. Compare yourself to how Jews lived throughout most of Jewish history. And you will realize by any measure that everybody sitting in this room is a visitor from another world. Can you imagine what our great-great-great-great-grandparents would think to walk into Sinai Temple? The wealth is unimaginable. And the only block to thinking yourself very rich is that you compare yourself up instead of comparing yourself down. Is because you know that even though we are in the 99th percentile of the wealthiest human beings who ever lived, we know that there's somebody down the street who's 99.5, and therefore we're poor. Which means that everybody here should be doing what the Bronfmans did on the scale that they can. When you give to a Jewish school, to Sinai Akiba, to the religious school, to the Israel Center, to the synagogue, you're doing exactly that. You are seeding the imagination of other people. You are using your tangible manna, your wealth, to create that which can't be measured, someone else's inspiration and imagination. It's wonderful to do it in the mountains of Utah, but you can do it in the hills of Los Angeles too. All of us have received manna from heaven. If we are not grateful, it's not because we have not been given. It's just because we don't know how to receive. So more than anything else, more than the content of the conference was its existence, was the fact that there are people who recognize that you can make a tremendous difference in this world if you give other people the chance to learn and to grow. I had a wonderful time. Met and spoke with both old friends and new. But really the most important part was the knowledge that it sparked imagination. It was the creation of ideas, of connection, of possibilities. It was part of the great collective effort of the Jewish people to fashion in our day a second set of tablets. Why? Ultimately, what is the goal? What is the end of the conference? Let me rephrase Edgar Bronfman's answer. If you had said to me, really, in the end, what is the idea of this conference, I would say, it too is taken from this morning's Parsha. The answer is, L'ma'an yirbu yimechem v'imei v'nechem k'imei ha-shamayim al ha'aretz, in order that we and our children may endure as Jews, as long as the heaven endures above the earth. Shabbat Shalom.